Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And today, for those of you who have a passion for business, who really want to be that entrepreneur, that self-employed person, we have got a fabulous guest today. Her name is Carol Roth. Her publication is titled The Entrepreneur Equation. We're hoping to share with you today some insights. If you really want to do something on your own that enables you to stand tall as an independent business person, what you have to be aware of. Carol, welcome to the show.
Donna, thank you so much for having me.
It is a delight. Carol, private business, independent entrepreneurs are the backbone of the United States. They actually are the backbone of any country on this planet, as far as I'm concerned. The desire to be an entrepreneur is so strong. Now, I know that you really have a passion for this, but you are coming from a little bit of a different angle in your book, The Entrepreneur's Equation, and I'd like my audience to know a little bit about your background. You graduated magna cum laude from the Wharton School of Business. You have been, for the last 15 years, working with people in business. You have raised more than $1 billion in capital. You've gotten all kinds of merger deals, acquisition transactions, anything relative to business you've been involved with. What made you decide that this was an arena you really wanted to get into? Why did you decide that Wharton was the school that you wanted to go to?
Well, I'll back it up a little bit, Donna, because it's somewhat of a funny story. I am, how shall I say, the white sheep in a family of black sheep, if you will.
Mom, you've got to explain that one.
Yes, my mom was Martha Stewart crossed with Cher. My father was a mobster crossed with a Jewish grandmother, and my sister is the lead singer of a heavy metal band. So somewhere in this whole chaos, I had some semblance of sanity. I really don't know where it came from. And neither of my parents actually went to college, surprisingly, and somehow I ended up with a great group of students in high school and just kind of saw what the other kids were doing and decided that I always had loved business. I was that kid who was, you know, hawking my wares, whether it be lemonade or, you know, a self-designed T-shirt, or actually I talk about in the book my very first story, which was selling my sister's toys back to her, which I guess is really not a legal business, but seemed like a really good one to me at the time. And so I really did have this passion for business, and Wharton is the preeminent school. And so I decided that I was going to go there, and my father said, you know, what's Wharton and do they take food stamps? And I said, oh boy, this is going to really be interesting. But I said, you know what, this is something that I believe is going to be really important and is an investment that I can make, an education that if I put the money in that I'm going to be able to get something out of it down the line. So I actually, with a little bit of a help from my father, but mostly on my own, put myself through college, graduated with $40,000 in college debt 16 years ago, and said, oh boy, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. And so when you have that level of debt, you really kind of look at things in a couple of ways. You say, well, if I really like to go deep in something, well, maybe I'll be a consultant, or if I have a little bit of ADD and I like to do a bunch of different things, you become an investment banker. I was much better suited to be an investment banker, so that's how I started my career. And as I worked with advising all kinds of middle market businesses, I sort of attracted the attention of entrepreneurs who were looking for advice on how to raise capital and how to do the things that all these success stories that I was working with was doing. And I just kept seeing these trends, these same questions over and over again, the same mistakes over and over again, and I love to help people. So if there was ever a question in the organization, always ended up getting filtered back through me. Oh, Carol will help you, and that really fueled my passion to want to work with entrepreneurs and small business owners. And as I dug in more deeply over the course of my career, I realized that in the space there were a lot of folks who were giving advice that I felt like was a little bit dangerous, and also who really didn't have the background to perhaps be giving the type of advice that they were giving. You know, perhaps they were a little bit more on the internet marketing side, or maybe they did something once that worked out well for them, but then assumed that that was the gospel that everybody else should follow. Mm-hmm. And so I felt with my breadth and depth of experience that I could bring a really unique perspective and voice to the market, and that has really resonated with the folks that I've been working with and throughout my media platform.
You bring out so much good common sense in dealing with the arena of business. There's nothing new about the fantasy of the get rich quick. That is where most of the cons in the world say, "Wahoo, I've got it for you." And even if they only charge you a dollar, all they need is 1 million people, and they've got $1 million, and most of those people are going to buy into whatever's going on, and then they cry because they find that they've not won what they thought was the grand prize of success and accomplishment. A few do. And getting past the murky distortions regarding business is very, very tough. Why do you think that people, when they're looking at doing business for themselves, think that this is going to be so absolutely god-awful wonderful, and not realizing that when you're in business for yourself, it's 24/7?
I think that there are a whole lot of reasons for that, Donna. Some of the ones that immediately come up for me is the glamorization of the entrepreneur in the media. And you hear these wonderful stories of folks like Mark Zuckerberg, who founded Facebook in his Harvard dorm room and is now, you know, worth billions of dollars, or Google, or, you know, Groupon here in Chicago. And I think what people don't realize and what the media does not do a good job of qualifying is that the reason we're hearing about these stories is that they're remarkable. They're newsworthy. If it happened every single day like that, they'd be reporting on something else entirely. So I think that there is this glamorization effect that's going on there. So I think that's one. Two, like you said, it's much easier to sell the passion, or I hate to say it, but the con, the get rich quick, the seven steps to success, the, you know, buy my real estate secrets and I will teach you to be a multimillionaire. People want to believe in that. I think that there is some sort of inherent gene that is passed down that if there's an easy way to do something, we would much rather do that than the tough way. And for whatever reason, common sense does not always prevail. I have a little phrase that I use called business beer goggling, whereas the business idea
like
looks a lot better, you know, when you first see it, and then you kind of wake up the next day and go, oh, that really wasn't as good as I thought it was. But I think that you know, when you get this sort of emotion and passion put into the equation, you know, it's almost like the difference between being in lust and in love. When you're in lust with something, even if it's a business, your judgment is sort of impaired versus the sort of long-term love where you have a little bit more of a level head. So for whatever reason, that that deep emotion gets us into trouble, whether it's business, whether it's a giant steak, or whether it's a very good-looking young man with a motorcycle.
You make a comment right at the beginning of your book that most business books are written by entrepreneurs who have just lost their virginity, meaning that they've had one great success. They tell their story, just what you've said. And we need to be aware that those people that really have had success usually have traveled a very long road. I can remember hearing many years ago, really pay attention to these so-called success stories, because so many of them have had 20, 30, 40 years, maybe even their entire lifetime. And overnight success, I'm sorry, it's exceedingly rare.
It's an overnight media success. It's not an overnight business success. And I think that that's what they leave out of the discussion is that, yes, you may be hearing about this for the first time, and now all of a sudden everyone's jumping on the story. But that doesn't mean that their experience or that their toil or that all of the things that went into the business took a very long time to do. And so I think that, you know, the fact that it does take this day in and day out hard work is so often really overlooked and is something that's so critical for the new entrepreneur to really think about. And I don't know why that isn't brought to light more often, Donna.
I really agree with that. I think of a gentleman that I know that became a multimillionaire cleaning floors. Now, most people would hear that story and they'd think, oh, you've got to be kidding. But I'm not. This is a guy that was at a time mowing grass, because that was the only way he could make a living. He had worked for a major company, and he had left it because he was so disgusted with it. Well, then he found that certain people just didn't know how to clean things, and he ended up starting, and it took him a good 7 to 10 years, I think it was, and he ended up being a multimillionaire. But let me tell you, he went through the school of hard knocks so many times. He ended up having like 40 or 50 people working for him, but he finally figured out how to train them, what to do, how to make sure everything was on top of what it should be, and by golly, he had such a reputation that when his word was dropped by any major company to another company for cleanup crews, he was at the top of the list.
You know what I love about that? What brings up something else that I think is very sort of anti the current zeitgeist, but is so grounded in reality, and that is that the people who do have these million-dollar businesses and who get rich and who persevere, so many of them are in sort of these unsexy industries, whether it's cleanup or waste removal or making widgets. And think about, from the other standpoint, from the passion, you know, follow your passion, how many struggling photographers and actors and hobbyists that you know. Mm-hmm. And that's really one of the things that is a huge issue for me, and that I see as a huge issue out there in the market, or the number of people are saying, you know, follow, you know, what it is that you love most to do in life. And I really don't know that that's the appropriate starting point for somebody who's thinking about a business. You had somebody who really found an opportunity, and guaranteed he's passionate about some aspect of that business, or he wouldn't be able to do that for 7 to 10 years. But is he passionate about cleaning floors? Probably not. But those are the things that people need. That's where the pain points are, and that's where the big bucks really are. And it's just unfortunate that, again, especially in today's economy, when people are really struggling from a job perspective and trying to figure out what to do, that you have these folks who are out there pushing so hard on, you know, follow your passion, follow your dreams, when it may not be the best opportunity for you to succeed.
I agree. Now, let's talk about how to screen. You have some very, very good comments in here. You say, why isn't there a screening process for entrepreneurship? Because not everybody is going to really suit that. A lot of people will say, I hate my job, I want to be my own boss. Little are they aware of what is required, the disciplines that are required if you're going to be your own boss and if you're going to be able to live. And many times there are sacrifices that have to be made. And I am consistently astonished at how many people do not realize what it takes to be in a business, to be dedicated to that business, whether you are one person or you're 5,000 individuals in that business and you're the head honcho running it, and what it takes to make sure that things are maintained and your standard of quality is kept up to par. Is there a screening process for someone who wants to be an entrepreneur?
Well, there is now that I wrote the book, and that's why I wrote it. I mean, I had gotten so fed up with the 7 steps to success, and I said, look, you know, we need to have a framework here because, you know, by the way, we all have a different definition of what success is. So if we all have different end goals, we can't possibly all take the same path to get to these various different places. And so I really wanted to create something that was very particular to each individual and allowed you to kind of look at your own situation as well as your goals and your objectives and figure out, okay, does this make sense for me and does it make sense for me right now? Because I think the one thing that people miss along the way is that, you know, it takes time to stack the odds in your favor. And just because it's not the right time for you to do it today doesn't mean it won't be the right time for you to do it ever. It just means do a little bit of prep work before you invest all of your time and your money and your effort into doing something. Now, certainly, Donna, there are some people who shouldn't ever be entrepreneurs, just like there are some people who should never enter the American Idol singing competition. And we have all seen those shows, right? You see the person who marches in front of the judges, who's completely tone deaf, who gives this awful performance. Everyone in America knows that they can't sing. The judges, you know, reinforce that, and then they march out of the room, and their family members say, "Oh no, no, the judges, they don't know what they're talking about. You're fabulous." And it kills me every time, because they could have easily said, you know what, you enjoy singing. You can sing in the bathtub. You can sing in the car. You can sing, you know, all day long, but you're just not going to earn a living at it. Mm-hmm. And so for some people, that's just going to be the case, that you're just not meant to be an entrepreneur. It's not suited for your personality. But for a whole lot of other people, it might be suited for you, but it just may not be the right time, or you may be falling into these myths and have the wrong mindset and motivation, which kind of sets you up for failure from the start. Or perhaps you're just not pursuing an opportunity that's big enough, because one of the things that I've been hearing a lot of, and you hit a little bit on this, is how many people are really working more hours for the same or less pay with more stress owning a business than if they had a job. And it is so much harder to be a business owner today than it was previously. It's easier to start, but it's harder to operate because you have so many more things that you need to do, and there's that much more competition. And, you know, technology and social media, while it's lowered the barriers to entry, has created that many more things that each business owner needs to do every single day. Mm-hmm. So that's either part of their time or more money coming out of their pocket to just keep up with the technological aspect and to reach their customers on an ongoing basis. So it means really going back and looking at the screening process, looking at your motivation, looking at the timing, looking at the specific opportunity, looking at yourself and your personality and what it is that you can handle, and then putting it all together and say, does this make sense for me? Or, you know, perhaps is there more that I can do to really ensure, if I'm going to make a go at this, that I'm going to be successful and I'm going to be successful in the way that I want to be successful?
And that, I think, is a big learning curve. I don't know of any shortcuts. I think there's a lot of people, and I can include myself in that, saying, well, I'm perfectly capable of handling responsibilities. In fact, it brings to mind a story you have in your book by Stella Insera, who is a wedding and event planner, and she owns her own business, Simply Dazzling Events, and she's in New York City. Now, this is a woman that she is really, really good at what she does, but her mother warned her, this is not going to be a piece of cake, sweetie. You're going to not necessarily be happy with your decision at times. And she said, people have the idea that what I do is so glamorous. They don't realize what it takes. And she said 90% of her time, and I'm quoting from your book, is handling administration, marketing, blogging, networking, selling, bookkeeping, and other tasks. 10% of her time is spent in using her creative event design skills, and that's her passion. That's what she loves to do. I thought this example is absolutely outstanding.
Yes, and I first of all, I love Stella and Sarah. I've never met her personally, but we obviously corresponded to get her story for the book. And I just thank her for being honest, because I think there are so many people who are putting up a front and struggling and just sort of, you know, feeling bad about it, almost embarrassed to admit that, boy, this really wasn't what I had signed up for, and I'm not doing what I thought that I was going to be doing. And I so appreciate Stella for her willingness to share the story and to say, look, this is really what I'm spending my time doing. And, you know, what was funny with her when I talked to her is that, you know, she went into it. She used to be the catering manager for this banquet facility, and she, you know, she really liked this creative part of it. And that she says that now not only is she doing, you know, very little of it, like you said, the 10% is the creative, but she kind of forgot that it wasn't her wedding. It was somebody else's wedding that she was planning. So even when it was creative, she didn't really have the last say. If she had a bride and groom whose aesthetic wasn't what, you know, she liked or that she felt was a little bit tacky, it sort of didn't make a difference because that's what the customer wanted. And that was a big wake-up call to her. And as you said, she's, you know, phenomenally successful. She's on the Style Network. You know, she's doing a great job, but she still, it still wasn't the American dream that she had thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yet she's committed to it because she does love it. And she is there. And I just love it when someone comes up to a person who's in business and they say, delegate. Delegate your stuff out. And you look at them with, and your eyes, you're ready to just blow the top of their heads off with your verbal M16. And you want to say, okay, where's the money going to come from? Because it's not that I'm afraid of delegating. It's because I've only got 50 cents in my pocket right now. And I don't dare tell you that because you'll think I'm a failure. But I'm eating angel hair pasta with chicken broth on it because I can't afford to buy a piece of steak. You know, people don't want to hear that.
No.
They want to hear all the glam.
It's definitely not nearly as sexy, and it doesn't make for the good story at cocktail parties, that is for sure.
It's amazing. Now, one of the things that you talk about in your book that I think is very, very important is that your customers and your employees are your bosses. And this, I thought, was just a very good statement. You have unhappy customers, you have no money coming in. You have employees that are disgruntled and just have it in for you, I can guarantee you they are going to sabotage you like you would not believe. So let's illuminate our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is one of the probably biggest eye-openers that I hear has come out of the book. And when I talk with entrepreneurs and work with entrepreneurs, it's amazing how many people feel like they're escaping a job or maybe they can't find a job or they just don't want to go back there because they really want control. They really want to be the one in charge. And I think it's amazing that they don't realize at first until we talk about this how many more people they need to report to when they own their own business. And I have this sort of visual. It's kind of like a totem pole. If you think about where you are when you have a job, you may start out at the bottom of the totem pole, but if you do a good job, you hopefully rise up that totem pole over time. And as you rise up, you have less and less people that you need to report to on a daily basis. And even when you're near the bottom, there are very few people who have any say over how much money you're making, what your hours of operation are, if you get hired or fired or get a bonus or whatnot. But if you think of that same totem pole when you own your own business, you're at the bottom of that totem pole and everybody else is on top of you and you never move up because you have to take care of all of these other people first. And the first is your customers because without customers, there is no business. And so, yes, you could. I hear all these people, well, you can pick and choose who your customers are and this and that. Well, that's true, but eventually you need to have some, otherwise you don't have a business. Mm-hmm. And they're going to tell you whether they like your services and your hours of operation and the uniform you're wearing or whatnot. And if they don't, they don't patronize your business and you don't get paid, so you, in effect, get fired. And you probably have many, many more of those as a business owner than you did when you were working at a job. And then layer on top, taking care of your employees. And I'll add to that, if you have an investor or a lender, if you own a franchise, your franchise parent company, if you have a store or an office space, your landlord, there are a lot of people who are telling you what to do. So the reality is that you've now increased the number of people who technically are your bosses that you need to report to by some exponential factor, and they all have their own agenda, and you're sitting at the bottom of this totem pole, and you never get a chance to rise up. So mm-hmm. it's really a different picture of business ownership than I think most people believe that they're signing up for.
90% of people that start into business flunk out. Doesn't mean that they're total failures in the sense of being the individual, but
fail to succeed.
They fail to succeed in an enterprise, and there's many people that have done it more than once, and that's okay. But that is a reality, and in today's economy, because of the shifts, we have some very interesting patternings. Technology, we have some other things that are going on that were not in place even 10 years ago, and they're happening now. So there is a very big shift. There's a bridge that if we're willing to build it and stick with it, we're going to be able to make the transition into environments of business. It's affecting every level of business. It's just amazing, and that's technology and the international marketplace. There's just a lot of things going on. So what may have been available in a job environment a few years back is no longer available today, or it's costumed differently today. So there's that adaptation. One of the things that you bring out in your book, which I want to address, is you say business ideas by themselves have no value. And that is so important. It's the business execution that has the value. And that does take planning, and that does take time. And it also takes money. That beautiful stuff we call green. The green economy that we're looking at. And it's all relating to the dollar. And I don't care where you are on this planet, that is a fact of life. Whether you're talking about cows or dollar bills, it doesn't make any difference. It's the value. It is what is it that is the medium of exchange that enables you to have the independence that you want.
It's so true, and I think that this is probably one of the areas that I meet with the most resistance on, because everybody has a brilliant idea at some point in time, and a lot of times what happens is that you then open your newspaper and you find out that somebody else has opened a business with that same idea and they've made a fortune, right? We've all had that happen. Mm-hmm. You turn on the infomercial and go, you know, I thought of that product, why didn't I do that? And so I think that there's this pervasive thought that if you dream up some really clever idea, that in itself is worth money, and that if somebody else were to just, you know, if you were to sell it off to somebody else and they took it and run with it, you know, you would be happy. And I think the challenge to get across to aspiring entrepreneurs or to people in businesses who maybe even are thinking about a new product or service is that we've gotten to a place, particularly in North America and other developed parts of the world, as it may be not the same in some of the, you know, third world nations that are coming online, but in our area, we have a really competitive environment. And basically, most people have everything that they want and a lot of things that we don't want and everything we need and a bunch of stuff we don't really need. And so to get the customer's attention to really create the longevity in the business is really more than having a great idea, because if you have a phenomenal idea and nobody knows about it, you don't have a business, and it's just become that much more expensive to continually reach your customer, convince them to buy from you on an ongoing basis. And so in this competitive environment, it's no longer about having the idea. You have to be able to fund that idea, and you have to be able to execute. And I know a lot of folks don't believe that. They're going, no, but I've got the great idea. I can give you great examples, and we can talk about a few from the book, of great ideas that failed, stupid ideas that succeeded, but more importantly, the same idea, the same company that had two different outcomes with two different sets of ownership. The one that stands out for me in the book is the UFC, which is the mixed martial arts league in this country, the premier one, that was on the brink of bankruptcy. Like, I mean, this thing was worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And the new owners, Dana White and the Fertitta brothers, came and they bought it out. They put more money into it, they changed the marketing, they changed the positioning, and they changed the way they executed this business. And now, just a short number of years later, this business is worth, by Forbes' calculation, about $1 billion. So if you have the same exact company, not even just the same idea, but the same company that at one point was worth zero and one point was worth $1 billion, what's the idea worth? Well, it certainly isn't the idea. It's the execution that made the difference. It was the same idea under both ownerships. It was just a different way of approaching the level of investment and the marketing and the way that they operated the business. And so I think it's really important for people to step aside from, I've got this idea to, what am I going to do with this idea? How am I going to get customers to buy in? How am I going to do this better than the competition and create barriers to entry? What do I bring to the table that's unique, that's going to allow my business to stand out with my leadership, versus someone else? There is, again, no get rich quick. You can't just sell this fantastic idea to somebody else. You have to put in the work. And even if it isn't a business, even if you're an inventor and it's a product, you still have to do something. You still have to create a prototype or get some protection and a patent or, show that there's a viable market for it. You can't just dream it up in your head and expect that somebody else is going to pay you for that.
Well, all of this and more. This book is a powerhouse. And it is something that if you're interested, you say, I really am ready to do something on my own. Or if you know of someone, whether they're young, middle-aged, or older, it doesn't make any difference, that they really would like to have a business of their own, they want to be the entrepreneur, then by golly, this book is worth its weight in gold and then some. The Entrepreneur Connection, Carol Roth has been my guest. Her website is carolroth.com. And you can go there and find out more about what she does. And believe me, she walks the walk, not just talking the talk. So she has a lot of very positive things to relate to. Carol, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. It's been a joy, and your book is really top-notch.
I appreciate it, Donna. It's been an absolute a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to chat about the Entrepreneur Equation and look forward to doing it again sometime.
I look forward to that myself. Carol Roth, again, my guest, her book, The Entrepreneur Equation, down to earth, direct, and clear in its message. It's a how-to in a way that you would never have dreamed. Go to carolroth.com and find out more. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here's the telephone number to check in with, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share with you a story about a man who was supposed to hang. I love all these weird stories, don't you? They're just fascinating stuff to hear. Because life is never a straight line. You just have all of these amazing things that go on. Well, there is a recorded event that occurred in 1803, the month of September, in Sydney, Australia. There was a man by the name of Joseph Samuels. He was convicted of killing a police officer, and he was sentenced to die. The officer apparently had interrupted Joseph Samuels' theft of a small desk, and the desk contained a bag of gold and silver coins. Now, some of those missing coins were found on Samuels, and of course he was arrested. Witnesses said that he had won the coins gambling and was miles away when the robbery occurred. But he was found guilty on the evidence that he had the stolen coins in his possession. Well, finally, he confessed to being the thief, but that he had not committed the murder. Well, there was a provost marshal who ordered an Isaac Simons, who was a man in custody as Samuel's partner, to be present at the public hanging in hopes of pressuring him into a confession. Well, Samuels arrived at the gallows in a horse-drawn cart, and the noose was placed around his neck. Now, his last words, the convicted man said that the real murderer was in the crowd. He was innocent, and that murderer was Isaac Simons. Now, Isaac Simons, when he heard his name mentioned and the fact that he was the murderer, just started yelling. He didn't want the words of the accuser, the man that was going to hang, to be heard. The people that were present for the hanging, because in the 1800s, a public hanging drew a lot of attention, well, they demanded a retrial. Now, as the mob of people were yelling, "Let's have a retrial," they were pushing forward. When they did that, it caused the guard to slap the horses that were pulling the wagon that the prisoner was on. Well, they moved forward, obviously, and Samuels was hanging from the rope. The rope broke. He was half awake, half conscious. They put him back in the cart, and they were going to hang him again, but this time the rope began to unravel until the feet of Samuels touched the ground. He was saved again. A third rope was placed around his neck, and it broke just above his head. So the governor was informed of this unique series of events, and he issued a reprieve for Samuels. Now, this is what's interesting about the rope. They said the rope showed no signs of being tampered with, and the rope itself, when they tested it, was able to hold a weight of 390 pounds, even when two of its three strands were cut. The outcome, Isaac Simons was tried and found guilty of murder. Fascinating, isn't it? I like those kinds of stories. I know they're very unusual and you don't hear of them very often, but they are recorded, and when they are, they make for a fascinating tale. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, and I'll light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you in Western Washington, I am going to be doing two appearances this month, one in Lakewood on the 26th, which is a Tuesday evening. I'm going to be appearing at 6108 Mount Tacoma Drive, Southwest in Lakewood, and I'm going to be talking about mental ecology, the power of the mind. There's a small fee of $10 at the door. It will start at 6:30 in the evening, and this is going to be an interactive class. It's a lot of fun to do. It's going to be very casual, and I hope you'll tell your friends and come on out. And then on the 30th, there is another event that is, in my mind, a very special one. The Ascension Foundation is putting this on. It's going to be on Saturday, July the 30th. There are two parts to the events of this day. From 10 a.m. until 4:30 in the afternoon, there's going to be free admission for the public to the healers, the readers that are there, the vendors that are going to be there with their various products, services, and people will be able to come in and interact with them and have conversation. I'm going to have a table there. I'll be doing many consultations for people. But then we'll be closing it out at 4:30 and then opening up again at 6 o'clock in the evening. Now, from 6 until 10, there's going to be those of us, and I'm going to be a VIP speaker, will be speaking from the stage and giving demonstrations and also explaining about the abilities of the mind. We're going to have Michael there, who is a physical medium. We're going to have some other people as well, and this is going to be an evening event that is going to be filled with a lot of information and also demonstration, and there is a fee of $35 for that. Now, that's going to be held at the Best Western Plus at River's Edge, and it's in the meeting room there, and that's at 15901 West Valley Highway in Seattle. So if you want more information, check out the website of the ascensionfoundation.com or call them at 206-356-6356. We hope to see you there. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. We were talking with Carol Roth, who is very knowledgeable about business, the challenges an entrepreneur has. Well, maybe you're aware of a restaurant that has ended up becoming a big, big business. Now, restaurants are one of the most difficult businesses to be successful with. A good 97% of them, if not 98% of them, fail, whether they're a small mom-and-pop business or a humongous enterprise. It is a real challenge because the competition is just incredible, and you really have to be able to offer something that people are going to say, I want to go back again and again and again. Now, this is about David Overton, and this is a man that now is running the Cheesecake Factory. Is there one of those in your neck of the woods? Well, there is the Cheesecake Factory here in the Seattle area, and it is an incredible place. And by golly, if you want to stay thin, you go in there, you'll come out a lot whiter than when you went in. The food is just absolutely awesome. Now, with this gentleman, David Overton, he said when he was growing up in the 1950s, his father, whose name was Oscar, managed retail stores in Detroit. His mother had found this absolutely awesome recipe for cheesecake and made a cheesecake for his dad's boss. Well, the boss liked it so much, he asked his mother, David's mom, if she would make 12 cheesecakes, and he wanted to give them as gifts to friends. So she said, sure. Well, that was, for her, something that spurred the entrepreneurial spirit. She decided she wanted to make cheesecakes. So she was making her cheesecakes in the basement of their home during the day, and at night, his father would deliver his mom's cheesecakes to two restaurants in town. And he said, I would get a penny a box for folding the cake boxes. So this started off as a family operation. And he said, I really enjoyed doing what I did, but he said, I love music more. And he said, when I was 15, I was playing drums and I was in a band, I was making money. And he said, after I finished college, I moved to San Francisco. And he said, when I found out how much I loved San Francisco, I encouraged my family to come and join me, to come live in the same area. So, by golly, that was a possibility, but he said, you know what, why don't you check out Los Angeles, because that is really a big, big place. And that was in 1975. So, they had what he considered the best cheesecake recipe in town. However, his mom's business wasn't doing very well. And they were doing a small wholesale cheesecake business. And he decided that they needed to open up a restaurant. He said, I believed it would help sell the cheesecakes. So guess where they chose to open up their first restaurant? Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. Now stop and think about that. Beverly Hills, the elite of the elite lives there. Everything is super colossal in price. Well, David said, I'd never worked in a restaurant before. So I talked to our accountant. And he thought my mom's cheesecakes were some of the best baked goods he had ever tasted. And he said, I'll raise the money. And he got the clients and family members to invest $125,000. We're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back with the rest of this awesome story of an entrepreneur that made a dream into a billion-dollar restaurant chain. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. And let me continue with this story about David Overton. Now, his mom had a cheesecake recipe. They were going to open up a restaurant. Their accountant believed in them and was able to get people to invest $125,000. Well, what David said is that in Beverly Hills, there's no lack of upscale dining. Those were his words. So they decided they would have a menu that had simpler fare, something like macaroni and cheese. He said, these were things that I could fix. I wasn't a chef, David said, but I could cook these foods and they could be good. So they opened on February 25th, 1978. He said, we didn't even have a sign or a grand opening banner. People knew about us, though. They were lined up outside, and our restaurant was full within 10 minutes. He said, after 5 years, we opened up 3 more restaurants in California, one in Washington, D.C. The people who had invested in us were making a lot of money, and my parents were finally able to semi-retire. And then in September 1992, they decided they were going to go public with their business. And from 1992 to 2005, their compounded annual growth rate in revenues was 27%. And even though we've been in a recession as a nation, he said their revenue for the year last year was over 4%. And he said this year, to 2011. They're opening up 6 to 9 restaurants, and there's a big difference in opening up one of these restaurants now. It cost $256,000 in 1978 to open up the restaurant. Today it costs $6.5 million to $7.5 million to open a brand new Cheesecake Factory restaurant. He said, my father was still alive to see this success evolve, and my mother was still alive to see us go public. We do really represent the true American success story. He said, if you can come up with a good product, work hard, and bring the right people together, especially your family, to make it happen. And I thought that was just an absolutely fabulous story to be able to share with you. Now, I want to let you know who's going to be coming on the show with me next week. We've got a unique diversity of guests. On Monday, we're going to be talking about psychic intuition. Nancy Dutetre is a woman who has put together a book. I have to tell you, it's very impressive. She is a researcher. She has interviewed some very, very famous people. She's pulled all kinds of information together, and it is down to earth, and it is an awesome read. So that's on Monday. Nancy Monson, we're going to be talking with on Tuesday about how crafts, doing craft work, can make a difference in your life and how it can actually help you heal if you're going through certain challenges. Jack Gilbert, Gilbert's Fables. We're going to be talking about two things. Jack works for the University of Arizona, and he has written a wonderful fable book for kids, but he's also got a book on business. So we're going to be talking about both of those on Wednesday. Rebounding. Teresa Musso is going to be my guest. We're going to talk about how you can rebound through life in a positive way, and then setting the captive free. Dr. Signton is going to be my guest. We've got a wonderful lineup of people, and I hope you'll tell your friends and join us. Now, I also want to let those of you know in Western Washington, or anyone else that might be coming out to Western Washington for a visit, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair is coming up. I have now 6 passes left, and by golly, if you or your family would like to attend this event, their family passes, I only have 6 left. Give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, and I will make sure you get that pass. I'll need your address and phone number so I can get this out to you. Or you can send me an email letting me know that you'd like a pass. Be sure to put your contact information in there, again, your address and your phone number, so that I can get this out to you as soon as possible. This event is starting up the first 3 weekends of August. It's just around the corner. It's hard to believe. And this is a family event. So if you would like, this family pass is a $45 value. It's for 2 adults and 2 children. So if you'd like to have one, it's in Bonnie Lake, Washington is where it is. Bonnie Lake, Washington. And you will be able to have the time of your life. This is totally oriented towards family. It is absolutely awesome. I'm into my 12th year of doing this, and I just love it, and I'll have a booth here. So look for me, and we'll have more information for you as time goes on. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. By the way, if you want to find a job, here are a couple of tips that have been sent along to me. One, if you're using job boards that charge a fee, stop it. Many of these different online skip boards or job boards inflate the number of listings they have. They'll often list out-of-date positions and post ads you can find elsewhere for free. So what you want to do is go to those job boards on company websites. They're the second leading source of new hires after personal referrals, and this is the evaluation that was achieved through a survey that was done. And you don't have to spend a lot of time searching multiple websites for openings. Go to linkup.com, linkup.com, and they gather up-to-date postings from thousands of company job boards. All you have to do is type in your job title, zip code, and they'll let you know what's available in your local area. Now, if you have a particular niche that you fit in, maybe retail, maybe you are involved in healthcare, maybe you're an editor, a writer, well, there are job boards that cater to most industries, and they have relationships with key companies, and they'll find out about new listings before anybody else, and that might give you a jump start on some of the competition. To find a job board for your profession, go to internetinc.com/job-search-websites or jobboardreviews.com. If you're looking for a government job, go to usajobs.gov, type in a keyword and your location, search for your state's website, and they'll have those jobs posted on the front page. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's a power within you that is meant to be expressed and to be absolutely the best in everything that it does. So remember, invest in yourself. You're your greatest asset. Donna Sebo here. Talk to you on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.